Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, California's status has shifted dramatically with the election of Joe Biden as the next president, writes CalMatters' Laurel Rosenhall. Goodbye, state of resistance. Hello, state of influence. When Vice President-elect Kamala Harris is sworn in, she'll be the first woman of color and first California Democrat to serve as vice president. We look at what that means for the Golden State and who might take over Harris's Senate seat. Join us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Kamala Harris's history-making election as the first woman and first Black and Asian American vice president-elect was not lost on anyone as she walked to the podium Saturday to this song, Work That, by Mary J. Blige. Less obvious was what her ascendancy means for California, which has rarely had representation in the White House. In this hour, we look at how California's status will shift in the federal government and the opportunity before Governor Newsom to appoint another history-making California senator to fill Harris's seat. Joining us is Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown show. Hi, Marisa Lagos.
Good morning, Mina.
Also with us is Laurel Rosenhall, reporter covering California politics for Cal Matters. Laurel Rosenhall, thanks so much for being with us, too.
Thanks for having me, Mina.
So, Laurel, as you note, Harris has not been shy about emphasizing her California roots in her campaigns.
Yeah, you know, when she began her run for the Democratic presidential nomination, she did it on the steps of Oakland City Hall, near where she was, the hospital where she was born. And she called herself a proud daughter of Oakland.
And she's held a lot of roles and built a powerful network here in California along the way, Marisa Lagos, ever since those early days.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've always seen with Kamala Harris is a real focus on the next step and her desire to keep rising within the Democratic Party. I think she's done a really good job of kind of locking up a lot of that support. You know, I think we've talked about this before, Mina. San Francisco is an excellent place to learn politics, right? Like, it is a very rough and tumble town. And I think we often have it's a better training ground than a lot of local governments. And so being district attorney here, winning that first race, I think you can really track from that the signs of her strength and her pragmatism when it came to looking at the moment she was in and what she should run for and how she should position herself.
And those deep ties to the Bay Area is also what has helped build a very deep friendship with Governor Gavin Newsom. Laurel Rosenhall, can you talk a little bit about their relationship?
Yeah, you know, they've known each other for decades. They both came up together in Bay Area politics, obviously. They have a lot of the same supporters and donors. They've had the same political consultants. And they're broadly seen on the political scene as kind of like having a sibling rivalry. They're friends, they're allies. They have a lot of shared history. Of course, they're also both really ambitious. And they've managed so far to not clash and run against each other by, you know, Harris running for Senate a few years ago and Newsom running for governor. But they know each other very well. Newsom has said that they've even gone on vacation together, and has already commented this week that he's been in frequent contact with the vice president-elect since the election was called over the weekend. So we expect that relationship will really be, you know, just mean a vast change for California in terms of going from this tumultuous relationship with the Trump administration to a Democratic administration where Newsom would already have natural alliances just because of, you know, sharing the same political party. But now on top of that, he has this, you know, longstanding friend in the White House, literally.
Yes, I feel like it's worth, Laurel Rosenhall, taking just a step back to look at what these last 4 years have been like for California under Trump. I mean, I think a tumultuous relationship is probably the nicest way to put it.
You know, it's been really, really just intense feuding. There's no other way to say it. You know, the state has sued the Trump administration about 100 times. And on all kinds of policy, healthcare, you know, immigration, environment, you know, across the board. In fact, just, you know, this week, the California was at the Supreme Court defending the Affordable Care Act against changes that the Trump administration wants to make. So, you know, there's been a legal animosity. There's also been the sort of presidential mean tweets animosity with some firing back by Newsom, who, of course, ran his campaign for governor on a platform of being the one who would lead the state of resistance, of, you know, basically being the one who would stick it to President Trump. And then after that, found himself in a position where, given the amount of the monumental disasters that we've had in our state between, you know, so many years of terrible wildfires and then now the pandemic, Newsom has had to figure out how to actually have a working relationship with Trump and his administration because disaster aid all comes from the federal government. So we've we've seen in recent months Newsom having to thread this needle after so much attacking the Trump administration. He's really kind of bent over backwards to make peace and make nice and try to, you know, make things work in order to help the state. So it's been very, very chaotic.
Though, Marisa Lagos, the Trump officials like to point out that California has gotten a lot of money from the federal government under Trump's tenure, the CARES Act, wildfire, disaster support, and so on. I mean, do you think that their view of it is fair, that ultimately Trump's bark, I guess, was worse than his bite?
I think that's true around disaster relief for sure. But let's be clear. I mean, this is a president who repeatedly and has made no sort of secret of it, has targeted, you know, blue cities, blue states as almost un-American, as not part of what, you know, the America that he's serving. I mean, we saw the tax cuts, things like that with the state and local exemptions erased really hurt places like California with its high cost of living and its higher tax structure. So, yes, I mean, the federal government has not reneged on its duty, really, its legal obligations around a lot of these disaster relief efforts. But that's come at times with the president, you know, hinting that he might not give the money. We had a dust up a few weeks ago where the federal government actually denied some money for a fire and then FEMA came through with it. But, you know, I think that what Democrats like Gavin Newsom want to see is the federal government go far beyond what they've been willing to under Trump and a Republican Congress. They've been agitating for months to see another relief package that includes a significant amount of money for state and local governments to help them kind of backfill some of the effects of the recession. And that hasn't come through. So, you know, I don't think that Trump has gone as far as some people feared in terms of sort of alienating California. But it's been an easy relationship all along. And just really quickly, I mean, I think it's interesting now. I think Laurel's absolutely right that, and you're right, Mina, that Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris have become close. But I would sort of put an asterisk there and say in recent years. I mean, until to some extent, I think her Senate run or especially his win as governor, they were very competitive. And yes, mm-hmm. they shared consultants and a lot of the same donors and even some friends. But I would say that for most of, you know, the time I covered them in California, they were both kind of looking at each other side-eyed the entire time trying to figure out what the other one was doing and not a lot of trust there. there. And, you know, Harris really came out of the gate very early when Barbara Boxer announced her retirement in 2016 and said, I'm running for this seat, really jumped on it. And we never, you know, got the full story as to whether that was because Newsom said, well, I'm running for governor for sure, what that was. But there is some understanding that there was some sort of backroom conversation, at least between their people, around making sure that they weren't competing against each other, because that was really the case, especially when they were in San Francisco. There was a lot of headbutting.
It's true. We're talking with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED, and Laurel Rosenhall, who covers politics for Cal Matters. Laurel Rosenhall, one of the things that we were talking about just now was, of course, the disaster relief funding from the federal government. I mean, is that one of the specific ways that you see Harris making a difference in addressing California's needs as vice president? A lot more attention and a lot more money from the federal government?
You know, it could be. I think that let me back up and just say that, you know, any Democratic administration would be easier for California to navigate, given that our state is completely controlled by Democrats at all levels of state government. So, and I don't necessarily, obviously, you know, Kamala Harris is going to have a national outlook. She is not going to want to be perceived as playing favorites with anyone, but there is evidence from the last, you know, couple of vice presidents. I talked to people about what that was like. And I spoke with an assembly speaker from the state of Delaware during, you know, Biden's vice presidency. And he just said that, you know, the state will have a direct line, and that the vice president will understand what's needed. There won't be as much need to explain or defend or rationalize. It will be, you know, it will be sort of more of a given of what's needed. So I think it's possible. I mean, the Trump administration has given California the disaster aid that it's sought. But I think that beyond the aid, there will be, California may be sort of more of a priority than it's been in the past. And that could come in terms of funding, or it could come in other more subtle ways.
And one of the more subtle ways that you've also brought up, Laurel Rosenhall, in your reporting, is that we could end up with quite a few more prominent Californians in the administration.
Yes, it's widely expected that, you know, there will be Californians who will be going to Washington to be part of this administration. Already, even just in the last few days, as the Biden Harris team has been putting out their announcements of their transition team, there's numerous Californians on there. In fact, when they named their COVID-19 advisory board, there were three doctors from UCSF who were on that. And as they've put out more information yesterday about people who will be working on the transitions for the various federal departments, whether it's Department of Justice, Department of Labor, Energy, Education, you know, there are numerous Californians from Stanford, from various UCs, from the Newsom administration, from Los Angeles County, from big tech companies. So there absolutely are a lot of Californians involved in the transition. And there are rumors and speculation of many who could be appointed to various positions in the new administration.
We're talking about what a Vice President Kamala Harris means for California. More after the break. Stay with us. This is Forum. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris will be the second Californian and first California Democrat to serve as vice president. Governor Newsom, who is now responsible for picking who will replace Harris in the Senate, said her new role will be profoundly significant for the state. We're looking at why with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent at KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown show, and Laurel Rosenhall, reporter covering California politics for Cal Matters. What do you hope for in a Vice President Kamala Harris? What do you hope having a Californian in the White House will do for the Golden State? What California policies could you see enacted at the federal level and would like to see? What do you think Newsom should do? Who should he appoint to the Senate seat that is now going to be vacated by Kamala Harris? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. And we have a comment from Bill, who writes, regarding the statement that California hasn't often had representation in the federal government, what about Nancy Pelosi? Well, I said hasn't had representation in the White House. But Bill raises a good point in terms of, yes, Marisa Lagos, California for a long time has had Nancy Pelosi as Speaker and Kevin McCarthy as well in very high level positions in the House, too. And so can you talk a little bit about what that combination could potentially mean as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an interesting question because I wouldn't say that Kevin McCarthy has really come to California's aid or backing in a number of levels. In fact, he's almost sided, I think, more with other states in some of the battles over money for California and questions of things like the aid I brought up for state and local governments. But certainly, you know, I mentioned at the top the rough and tumble town this is. I think that we do, in especially the Bay Area, have a sort of outsized influence on politics, both statewide and nationally. I know we'll get to who might be Kamala Harris's replacement in a moment, but I think that's going to be a part of the conversation, is should it be somebody from the southern part of the state because of that? You know, but the truth is, Pelosi, her role is far more than representing San Francisco, which I think she does very well. I know some progressives would push back on that, but if you look at her votes, you know, her job is to keep that caucus together. And so one of the reasons she gets so much grief from the left wing of the party is that she's constantly looking out for the flanks of her more moderate members, who were broadly the reason that you know, Democrats got such a majority in 2018. And they did lose some of these seats this time around. And I think some of those are in districts where we'll keep seeing them swing back and forth potentially as we move forward. But, you know, I think Pelosi in, you know, the same way Kamala Harris will be, I mean, they're not going to be focused just on California, right? There's a big difference between being one congressperson or one senator or being in leadership or in the White House. So certainly we have the ear of those folks, but I think they are, you know, dedicated to serving the nation as a whole. This is something that Biden is really trying to stress right now, that he sees himself as a president for all Americans. And so you're not going to necessarily see as openly, I think, the sort of conversations only arguing for something that would benefit California or maybe coastal or blue states. However, obviously, behind closed doors, like Pelosi, Harris are all, I think, I hope, you know, you can expect that they would be speaking on behalf of California in a lot of conversations as they also weigh the broader implications.
Absolutely. Though, how has the role of Vice President Laura Rosenthal become more influential over the years?
Yeah, you know, I interviewed Joel Goldstein about that. He's one of the nation's sort of preeminent scholars on the vice presidency. And he said that it's just really, really changed over the years. Initially, in the early periods of American history, the vice president was really just about kind of working with the Senate. And now the vice president has become much more of a counselor and advisor. That's changed over the last several decades. And he thinks that Kamala Harris could become a very influential vice president. Why? Because of the relationship that Biden had with Barack Obama when Biden was vice president. You know, Barack Obama treated him as a real trusted advisor, was the so-called last person in the room when he had a big decision to make, that he invited, you know, Biden onto many, many meetings, gave him important areas of policy to oversee, including the economic recovery from the recession. And Biden said in announcing that he wanted Harris as his running mate, that she would similarly be the last one in the room when he was making big decisions. So, you know, having her in that position, you know, with the president through all of the decision making and weighing in, it's expected that she will be influential, and that, you know, as a Californian, she will be keeping in mind what California needs. Again, not to be provincial and to not to necessarily favor California, but to be much more. It's much more of a line of influence for our state than we've had at the White House in, you know, a generation.
What specific policy initiatives, Laura Rosenthal, do you think she could be tasked with?
Well, so, you know, they haven't said, so just to be clear, this is based on, you know, some sort of reading of the tea leaves, but from, you know, she has obviously her career in criminal justice as an attorney general and a district attorney. So that would make sense if there was, you know, work related to police reform or other criminal justice issues. California has had enormous leadership in climate areas of climate policy nationwide. And during the Obama administration, Obama turned to California as a model for some, you know, national climate policy. So perhaps that could be an area. Obviously, there's Kamala Harris's leadership negotiating the mortgage settlement when she was attorney general. So perhaps, you know, something related to the, you know, housing and economic recovery that's needed from this pandemic. So those are some areas that people think where she could have influence. But again, nothing's officially been announced.
Again, we're talking with Laura Rosenthal of CalMatters, Marisa Lagos of KQED, and you, our listeners, are with us. Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786 if you want to weigh in on what you hope for in a Vice President Kamala Harris and what kind of influence California will have as a result in the White House. Also, tell us, who do you think Newsom should appoint to the Senate and why, and what qualities are important to you in a California senator? You can get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Barbara writes, more dollars flow from California to the federal government than from the federal government to California. Wilhelm writes, what about Adam Schiff to replace Harris in the Senate? And Lori writes, do your guests think Senator Feinstein will retire and allow Newsom a second appointment now that Biden is about to be in the White House? Okay, before we start to go through some of these names, I was wondering if you could, Marisa Lagos, just put in context for us how big a prize a California Senate seat really is for politicians.
I mean, it's huge because it's safe usually, right? I mean, we saw Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein were elected in 1992. Dianne Feinstein obviously is still in that seat. Boxer, on her terms, retired in 2016. So getting that edge up, you know, whoever gets appointed to this seat will have 2 years to raise their name ID, to be the incumbent, to raise the money. And so I wouldn't expect necessarily that that person wouldn't get a challenger. I think a lot of, especially younger progressive people, are feeling a little bit more energized to take on folks within their own party. But it's a safe blue seat, and it's very hard to beat an incumbent. And so I think that it is a huge prize, and one that I'm sure the governor's thinking very carefully about, because for whoever he makes happy with this decision, he's going to disappoint a lot of other folks.
And what do you think about the suggestion of an Adam Schiff? Do you think he's in the running?
I think, sure, but I think that, you know, and I know I'm going to make people mad about when I say this, but I think Gavin Newsom is going to be very hard pressed to name a white man to that seat. I mean, Kamala Harris is one of two black senators. She's the only female black senator. We've never had a Latino or a Latina represent California in the U.S. Senate. I think that given the demographics of this state and of our senators, having two women, which is relatively unusual as well in the U.S. Senate, that those are all going to be weighing on his mind. And I would be very surprised if someone like Schiff was chosen ultimately, even, you know, even given all of, obviously he's very well respected and liked within the party, and I think he has a bright future ahead. But I just think that that's a hard decision for Gavin Newsom to make, given kind of who brought him to the party in California, so to speak.
And what do you think of Lori's question, Laurel? Do your guests think Senator Feinstein will retire and allow Newsom a second appointment?
You know, I don't expect that she would, but to be fair, that's not a question that I've been busy reporting on recently. So I haven't asked that question of many people. But given she was just reelected 2 years ago, and, you know, I don't know why, unless she had some, you know, something arise that, you know, would prevent her from doing her job, I don't know why she would want to give Newsom another pick. But, you know,
I think given, I mean, she's 87 years old, first of all, right? So she has another 4 years. That's a long time. I think she's close with Newsom. You know, we've seen this in sort of historic politics that people, I mean, this used to be very commonplace where senators would resign. I mean, they might fill out their term, but before the final days of their term, so that so that the new incoming senator from their state could get seniority over the new other members. I would guess that, you know, given her age and some of the criticisms we've seen and the fact that she is an ally of Newsom and probably feels like she could have his ear, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And I think, you know, given the changing kind of politics of California, I'm sure she would be delighted to have a hand in who replaces her, because, as I just mentioned, they would have a leg up. But, you know, she's still going strong, so never say never. And it would be pretty remarkable for Newsom to get two picks, right?
You know, two names that I have seen mentioned most often, speaking of two, not that he would ever get that, but as we're saying, who knows, are Laurel Rosenhall, Alex Padilla, of course, California Secretary of State, and Attorney General Javier Becerra. Have you seen the same thing?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Alex Padilla is well known in among political insiders as, you know, long having had ambitions of going to the United States Senate. He began his political career working for Dianne Feinstein. He is a close ally of Newsom's. He has, a pretty amazing resume already, given his relative youth. He was on the Los Angeles City Council starting in his 20s. He served in the state legislature for many years before becoming Secretary of State. As Secretary of State, he's overseen this enormous increase in voter registration that California has had these last few years. And he would be the first Latino senator if he were appointed. Javier Becerra obviously is the attorney general. It seems, of course, his name is out there. It seems to me less likely that he would be appointed, because he was appointed to fill Kamala Harris's position as attorney general when she was elected to the Senate. And I just think it would be really a strange political fluke for Javier Becerra to follow in Kamala Harris's footsteps in two different positions. But that doesn't mean it couldn't happen. That's just my own sort of personal reading of it. It seems odd for two different governors to pick the same person when there's a state full of qualified Democrats who want the seat.
Marisa Lagos, I think it may have been in another CalMatters piece where I saw Mike Madrid, the Republican strategist, being quoted as saying that he would be shocked if it was not a Latino or Latina senator. So what kind of pressure do you think Newsom is under? And does he welcome it because it is another history-making opportunity?
I don't know if he welcomes it, but I think, of course, Mike Madrid is going to say that. He's a long time, and rightfully so, been a huge advocate for more Latinos and more Latino power in politics. But I do think that is the main sort of pressure we're seeing sort of publicly placed on Newsom is not, you know, I think behind the scenes folks are jockeying for different names, individuals. I think publicly what we are seeing is a very concerted push from Latinx leaders in this state to pick somebody who is Latino or Latina. And I think that, you know, they're not making any bones about it. They feel like, given the demographics here, given the fact that this has never happened, that is who should be chosen. I mean, I found it really interesting. The Washington Post did this whole long story, and they really positioned Becerra and Padilla as the kind of the top front runners because of this question around Latinx community, and didn't mention the woman part, which,
yes,
as a woman, I feel like is really important. Like I said, it's very unusual to have two senators, especially from a state as large and powerful as California, that are women. Other names that have been brought up are the East Bay Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Los Angeles area Congresswoman Karen Bass. Bass, you'll remember, was in the running or was thought to be, at least, for the vice presidential slot. Both of them could be seen as potentially more caretaker type appointments. I mean, I haven't heard directly from them that they wouldn't run, but they are both older. Bass made clear that if she had been chosen for VP, she wouldn't have been running for president. And so I think that's a consideration too. Do you want to put somebody there who you feel like is going to, you know, be able to run and keep that seat for a while? Or is it better to kind of, you know, not make anybody too mad by picking more of a caretaker? And that's probably another consideration as, in addition to the demographic ones that Newsom's weighing right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go to Vicky in Berkeley. Hi, Vicky.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So So I'm an advocate for Barbara Lee, and I'd like a really full discussion. She has a history. She has integrity when many people couldn't. And I think she could represent California and the country incredibly well. And I'd like to hear a really thoughtful discussion.
Vicky, thanks.
I don't want her dismissed.
And, you know, we actually have quite a few comments to that. Hillary writes, Barbara Lee for Senate. She's a badass and would be a wonderful representative for California. The sister writes, Barbara Lee has represented California in her congressional seat so well for so long. She has the experience and deserves to be senator if she wants to serve in that capacity. Another listener writes, not Barbara Lee for Senate. She should be the Speaker of the House. We need a progressive that isn't already a key member of the House. So Laurel Rosenhall, start us off. Barbara Lee, what are her chances?
Well, you know, she is in contention. As Marisa said, there definitely are advocates out there saying that the next senator needs to be a woman. It's, you know, it's interesting. In California, we've been represented by two women in the state Senate for nearly 30 years. So it seems maybe not that groundbreaking to be represented by a woman senator. But the overall makeup of the Senate is women make up, I want to say something, it's around one quarter of the Senate are women. So there definitely are advocates saying that, you know, a woman and in particular a Black woman, because Kamala Harris right now is the only Black woman in the Senate.
Black and Indian American, yes.
Correct. And so there is definitely a constituency lobbying for her. And I believe there was a poll by the University of Southern California recently, and Barbara Lee was the name that most voters seemed interested in that poll. However, you know, it's interesting. Most people were not familiar overall with the many names that were proposed in this poll. Of those that were suggested, Barbara Lee was the most favored. But also a lot of voters really didn't necessarily want someone who came out of politics. Interestingly, most people said in this poll they wanted Newsom to pick someone who was a fresh and new voice in politics. 76% of people in the poll said that. So they didn't necessarily think that someone who had a long political record was the way to go.
Well, just to add one more little piece of this on Barbara Lee and about Kamala Harris being a biracial senator. I mean, Carol writes, it would be a travesty if Senator Harris's successor is not also a woman of color. I have great respect for Barbara Lee, but I am all for London Breed. Her lived experience would be so important in the Senate. She has also done a superb job as mayor of San Francisco, and her youth suggests that she would have a long and fruitful career in the Senate. We'll hear more from our listeners after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about what a Vice President Kamala Harris means for California and what kind of influence her California roots could have in the Biden-Harris administration. We're talking with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown show. We're also talking with Laurel Rosenhall of CalMatter. She's a reporter who covers California politics deeply there. And you, our listeners, are with us. What do you hope having a Californian in the White House will do for the Golden State? Who do you think Newsom should appoint to the Senate to replace Kamala Harris, and why? And what qualities are important to you in a California senator? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter or Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. This listener writes, a Latinx senator. It's about time. What about Becerra? And another listener writes, Javier Becerra, he's just awesome and deserves a promotion to the national scene. I mean, Marisa Lagos, Latinx senators, what about women? I mean, I've also seen LA Supervisor Hilda Solis on that list, State Senator Maria Durazo. I mean, who are in contention?
Yeah, I mean... There's so many considerations that somebody has to make. Just quickly on the Barbara Lee thing, I have heard from people maybe involved, at least close to Kamala, that she is definitely on the, you know, on the short list. I genuinely don't think the governor has made a decision yet. But yeah, I mean, you know, Padilla, I think, comes up so much because he has made no secret of his, or at least internally. I mean, we've all been hearing for years that he had his eye on Feinstein's seat. He also backed Newsom very early against Antonio Villaraigosa, who was served with Padilla on the LA City Council. And even though they weren't like necessarily super close allies, I mean, there's this like collegiality that often happens when those sorts of races happen. And so the fact that Padilla backed Newsom early, I think, gave him some credibility in LA, especially with the Latino community. And that's something that, you know, someone like Newsom's not going to forget. But I agree. I mean, I think I've been saying publicly, I find it hard to believe that in this moment, given the demographics, I mean, the U.S. Senate, ironically, has a better, I think, statistical track record in terms of female gender, you know, representation than a lot of bodies. But it still seems like, given the last few years and the conversations we've been having about women in politics, that that's a hard sell to make. But you know, like we're covering all of these things right now, right, Mina, that he's going to have to think about, you know, whether it's these different communities within California, whether it's, you know, who's historically supported him. I'm sure Kamala Harris has some thoughts on who she'd like to see replace her. And she hasn't said them publicly, but I would be surprised if she and the governor haven't been talking about this for some time to some extent.
And of course, the other point you made, Marisa, was electability, right? I mean, he's thinking about somebody who would be easily reelected after the 2 years.
Or who is a caretaker and then he doesn't have that hanging over his head that he essentially stacked the deck for one particular person.
Right.
And those are both very, I mean...
But do you think that's in his personality typically? I mean, do you think someone would appoint a caretaker?
Maybe, because like... given all the calls we're getting, if he were to replace to name a Barbara Lee or a Karen Bass, that would be, I think that that would check some boxes as well and excite some people, even if they weren't going to run again. I should note, Mina, I actually asked Barbara Lee this a couple weeks ago on Political Breakdown, you know, just said, hey, if Kamala and Biden win, like, what type of person do you think the governor should appoint? Maybe someone like you. And she laughed very hard at that, which I took as a sign that she's probably interested.
Hmm. Well, Kalpana tweets, I'm hoping for justice reform across the country, decriminalizing drug addiction and reform and overhaul of the election laws. I mean, I think one of the things, Laura Rosenhall, that Kalpana's tweet is raising is maybe what kind of California policies or things that the administration has shown interest in could be enacted at the federal level. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what role Kamala Harris has in that. Obviously, her record in California was seen as someone who, you know, played it safe on the criminal justice reforms that she advocated for here. There were, you know, proposals in the legislature that, you know, for example, to do independent investigations of police shootings. She didn't, you know, get behind that. On the other hand, she did, while she was at the while she was attorney general, she made she put a body camera requirement on the state level law enforcement officers. That was a first, and began a new system of data collection that really has led to, now that we're a few years into it, there really is a lot more information about law enforcement activities across the state than we've had in the past. I think that what the big question is, as far as on policy, is what happens with the United States Senate and whether there is one party control in Congress or whether you have a, you know, Democratic House and a Republican Senate, in which case, you know, legislation will be difficult. And the question becomes, you know, what can be done at the executive level on those various issues.
Well, let me go to some more comments. Barbara writes, my first choice to replace Harris is Karen Bass. Lewis writes, no mention of Ro Khanna. He's definitely on many Californians' radar. And Kurt writes, Governor Newsom should pick Nanette Diaz-Barragan from the San Pedro area to replace Kamala Harris. I'm a big fan. Let me go to...
Can I jump into
Yeah, yeah.
I just got a text by, I won't shout them out, but a local politician who points out, don't forget... the LGBT community. Another name that's come up is Robert Garcia, the Long Beach mayor. He's young. He's Latino. He is openly gay. He lost both of his parents to COVID and has been really seen as a rising star in California. But I think all the names that our listeners have brought up, I have heard as well. And I think, I mean, it's really just this embarrassment of riches and absolutely no pressure on Newsom.
Right. But you're the person who texted you is absolutely right. I mean, Long Beach Mayor Robert Garcia is also a name I have seen on multiple lists as well. But let me get some more callers in here. Tracy in Redwood City. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My first question was a little late. You guys talked about it earlier. But you'd mentioned whether California will have any benefit from having a Californian in the White House. And I was thinking back to when Reagan was there. Do you guys have any recollection of California benefiting from that? And then secondly, I think I read an opinion piece in the Chronicle a couple of days ago where the individual was campaigning for that we should have a special election to select Kamala Harris's replacement. I'm wondering if your guests could comment on that.
Tracy, thanks. Yes, that's also been raised. But Laurel Rosenhall, in terms of, you know, the benefit of having Reagan in the White House, can you point to anything concrete?
Well, I did talk to a supervisor from San Luis Obispo County who worked in Reagan's White House. And what he said was that really the influence of the state came from the people that Reagan brought with him. And many of them were Californians that he brought, you know, several people from California who had high ranking positions in his cabinet who were advisors. And so in that sense, the state had influence. As to the other question, that was Christine Pelosi, that was the speaker's daughter who had that piece in the Chronicle recently advocating for the special election. And I haven't heard much energy around that. I'm not sure how many problems that solves for Newsom, or whether that, you know, will pick up steam. It seems like he does seem sort of burdened by this decision. He keeps kind of talking about it, saying it's vexing, it's challenging. He's being overwhelmed with pitches and lobbying. So, you know, maybe that would be a way to get out of it. But in any event, I think he would still have to appoint someone for even the short term until the special election. So I'm not sure if it completely absolves him from the decision. And frankly, as a governor, it's one of the very unusual, you know, powers that he has to make this appointment. And it's an opportunity for his legacy potentially to last beyond his own years in office if he appoints someone who is reelected and does have a career, you know, in representing California in Washington for decades to come. It would be a way for him to leave his legacy.
Well, and Mina, can I jump in just quickly? Two things. I mean, one is that I think, let's not forget, too, if he picks somebody who's holding another office, then he gets to pick their replacement, too. So there's this kind of domino effect that is, I think, very attractive. You know, if you pick Alex Padilla, then you get to appoint a Secretary of State and give them a leg up.
Yes.
And I think Newsom also, let's look at his history. Let's not forget 2004, opening up City Hall to gay marriage, backing marijuana legalization, really coming out, I think, very strongly among the governors at the beginning of COVID and taking the lead on this. He likes to make a splash. So I think that will be a consideration here. I would look for somebody, even if it's a caretaker, but that has some sort of significance, whether it's a progressive, whether it's a Latino person. And just on the Ro Khanna issue, his name has come up. I think I don't know how close he and the governor are. He's definitely a little bit more controversial, I think, within the Democratic Party. So that one has surprised me, but he's certainly been named on a lot of lists that I've seen.
Well, this listener writes, Newsom should fill Harris's seat with Kevin DeLeon. Newsom should not check the boxes and only fill it with someone who has Kamala Harris's appearance. The replacement should not be an ally or a San Francisco insider deal or a deal hatched with Feinstein's involvement. If Newsom picks the wrong person, then it's going to be time to work against him from now on. The media coverage of this issue has been poor. Robert writes, Californians need a senator like Representative Katie Porter, who will fight and be a counterweight to Dianne Feinstein. And then I'd like to get your reaction to this comment from Alex, who writes, we just affirmed by vote that we don't want gender or race considered for things like appointments and college admissions. But here we are talking not about how qualified a candidate for the Senate appointment might be, but what gender and ethnicity they are. Laurel or Marisa, do you want to weigh in on Alex's point here?
I mean, I think
Marisa?
That, yeah, I mean, I said this at the beginning. I get a lot of pushback when we talk about this, but I do think it's part of the consideration. And I think you also have to think about the fact that, I mean, it's pretty remarkable that in this state, we have never had a Latino senator, right? So it's not completely irrelevant. I mean, representation matters. We've seen that over and over again. And I don't think anyone we're talking about is unqualified, right? So, you know, it is the affirmative action conversation, and it's a complicated one, and one that obviously California voters just rejected when it comes to UC admissions and public hiring. But, you know, Newsom's not bound by any of that in this decision, and he is looking at his constituencies and thinking about what this means for them and for his future and for the state. And I understand that people are turned off by this conversation, but I just think that if you look at the history of our government, it has been largely dominated by white men, and they have had a leg up because of historic, you know, racism and sexism and other things. It's not that they've always been the best candidate for the job, per se. So this is an opportunity that a governor gets to put his thumb on the scale in a different way. And it can lead, and it has led in the past in many positions, to people keeping those jobs who may not have had the opportunity to before. I mean, London Breed came up. She may not be mayor right now if Ed Lee hadn't passed away suddenly and she had taken that role as the Board of Supervisors president. Dianne Feinstein became mayor in San Francisco because of that, you know, horrific shooting of George Moscone and Harvey Milk. And so, we've often seen women and other minority groups only get really powerful positions because of almost a fluke of history.
Yes.
But then be able to keep them.
Well, I think it's hard to gauge how important representation is at the highest levels of the federal government if you have always had that level of representation at the highest levels of the federal government. Let me go to Moose in Walnut Creek. Hi, Moose.
Hi, thanks for having me. Just want to add one thing. I heard that there is electability. I think anyone who is a liberal Democrat in California will be reelected. Number two, I'm a Bernie Sanders fan. Of course, I will always vote for anyone who is liberal. But I think California should lead in that direction of beefing up like more of a social, democratic socialism. There is a huge disconnect of what the definition of that is in the United States. And California should take the lead, support Bernie Sanders in that direction, because it does help the middle class better than any other platform that I can see. The other part is I'm a huge fan of Katie Porter because of who she is, because of, like, I've watched her nail down, and she's a good fighter, and we need people like that. If we think about someone who is not an outsider, he might like the experience, or she might like the experience. I think we need someone who understands how things work and who can hit the ground running. It's no more fun to watch anything in D.C., and California, as the biggest state, should lead, and we should own it. Thank you.
Moose, thanks for sharing that. And let me remind listeners that we're talking about Kamala Harris's vacant Senate seat, or opening up. She is vice president-elect. We're talking about what that means for California as well. We're talking with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown, and Laurel Rosenhall, reporter covering California politics for Cal Matters. And you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. And let me also just read a few more of these comments. One is just a simple, what is the timing for a Senate nomination, and when would that person take office? Can you remind remind us, Laurel Rosenhall, when this all needs to happen?
Well, it'll be sometime between now and January, but we don't really know specifically any more specifically than that. And Newsom was asked this week if he could give a specific timeline, and he said no. He said he wouldn't give a timeline. So it'll depend on, you know, when Senator Harris leaves her place. Obviously, the administration in Washington will begin on January 20th. So it'll be sometime between now and then. Exactly when, I mean, I have heard some speculation about maybe some small benefits of doing it sooner rather than later, so that the new person could get a little bit of edge in the seniority in the Senate, which is very important there, but it would be a small edge.
Well, let me go to David in Oakland. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking the call. I live in Oakland, and Barbara Lee represents me and all that means for many years. However, like another previous caller, I wanted to see her as Speaker of the House when Nancy Pelosi steps down. And since Karen Bass did such a magnificent job, although the Republican senators were just, you know what, the DJT, I'd like to see her. But I suspect the governor may only appoint a place keeper, in that I think he term limits out after this term, and I think he would like to run for U.S. Senator. Thus, he's not going to appoint a strong black woman who would pose a challenge to him and his election hopes.
Well, a little correction there. His current term goes until 2022, and then he could run for re-election for another 4 years as governor if he wanted to.
Well, thanks for weighing in on that. Thanks, Laurel Rosenhall, for that as well. And, you know, the speculation is wild, Marisa Lagos. I mean, leave us with some final thoughts about what you are watching, because ultimately a lot of these names that are being floated for senator are also people who will likely see themselves in the administration in some role or another.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that is on the timing question. Final thought is, like, I think the Newsom administration is watching to see who gets appointed or brought into the transition and potential administration. And then, you know, Harris has to step down, and that timing is kind of on her end. So I think that that's going to be something to watch, too. I'm sure they're in conversations, and there's not a huge rush, because I don't think anyone except for some members of Congress are going to be sworn in before the big swearing in next year.
Marisa Lagos of KQED, Laurel Rosenhall of Cal Matters, thanks to both of you. Also, thanks to Ariana Prale for producing today's segment, and our listeners for their questions and comments. Always great to hear them weigh in. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.